s nebri na bodo mai milach rechanto. Well, hello, it's Gunora Jones here. I'm going to start a new series with the permission, of course, of the editor, Alan Evans. A series about my people. In other words, people I knew who made an impact throughout life, known in other circles, not just politics. And we're starting with one such person today, Alan Gibbard. An author, a novelist, a broadcaster, a writer. He writes for Golwg, the Welsh language magazine as well. You name it, Alan Gibbard has done it. Over 30 books, mind. Only one other person, I reckon, or so I'm told, Lynn Ebenezer, has written more than Alan. Well, Alan, welcome.
Thank you very much, diolch yn fawr.
Let's start with in the beginning, under the dechreuad. Where did you see the light of day?
I first saw the light of day back in the east, in Dowlais Top, to be accurate. My father had accepted a call to be a minister of a chapel in Dowlais, Pen y Wern, and about a year later, I came in to the world. So my first formative years, I lived there for the first 5 years of my life, and I'm really grateful for that because it gave me so much. It was a very historical place that I've come to realise. If I turned right outside from our house, you'd pass the house where the historian Gwyn Alf Williams was brought up.
Oh, really?
And if you turned left outside the house near where my dad had a car garage for the car, you passed the place where Laura Ashley was born. So you were surrounded by history of all sorts and
you
the ironworks.
An important place.
Absolutely, and that's increased over the years. And it also gave me the use of both languages. Only spoke Welsh in chapel and in the house, and only spoke English outside. So I've been very fortunate to have both languages side by side from day one.
And from there, after a few years?
From there, my dad then moved as a minister to Binia outside Llanelli. So we moved from the industrial east to the more rural west. I come closer to my father's own roots because his family is from the Gwendraith Valley. So we were coming closer then to where my father came from. And I then went to Bryn Siarfel Primary School. I always used to say that, yes, there are two Welsh primary schools in Llanelli. It's not only Dewi Sant. Bryn Siarfel existed as well. And I was proud of that. And still am. And then from there to Llanelli Boys Grammar School, and that was a big shock. A school and primary school of 120 kids, that's it, to a grammar school of 960 boys. It was a big change.
A well-known grammar school.
Absolutely, and I loved the school as well. Famous for rugby,
that's right.
Which I didn't excel in because the teams were so good. I think I scraped into the thirds a couple of times.
Well, I think back, you know, quite a few rugby internationals came from Gwendraith. Equally, a lot came from Llanelli.
Yeah, it was part of the culture.
Yeah, Terry Price, Stuart Davis, and a few others. Well, we better stop talking about those reminiscences. Let's go on to your first song.
First Choice of Music is the first LP I bought from Woolworths in Swansea when I was living in Binia. It's Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Pictures at an Exhibition, and this is one of the tracks from there, which is a real foot stomper, very hard to sit still to, Nutrocker.
Thank you.
Okay, Nuttrucker.
That's it.
I'm amazed that you chose that. You know, my day it would have been Mario Lanza and things of that kind. But each one to his own.
Absolutely.
Different generation. Okay, we are now leaving school. Left Llanelli Grammar School. What next?
I went to do my degree in what was then called the Polytechnic of Wales, University of South Wales, now Intraforest, in Pontypridd. And it was a humanities degree. And my choice of college and degree was not to the satisfaction of my headmaster at all. He wasn't happy. He thought I should go to a more traditionally acceptable university to do a more traditionally acceptable degree.
All right.
But I was adamant. I said, no, I want to do humanities in Treforest. And that's what I ended up doing. And it was great. As much as the education itself, which is quite broad, I was also one of the youngest on the entire degree course because there were many people there because of the nature of polytechnic education who'd come from different parts of their life to study again. There was a man on the same degree as me who was in his late 60s. There was a former trade unionist from Ebbw Vale Steelworks who'd been made redundant. There was a woman who'd just been divorced and wanted something to do. So I had all that, and that was as much a part of the education as the actual course itself, and it was great. I loved it. Yeah,
people with life experience.
Yeah.
A bit like the School of Hard Knocks.
It was
at
times.
Not quite as bad as that,
no.
Obviously.
No, but and there were a lot of sheep in that college as well.
Yes. You moved then from there
As soon as I graduated, I had a job with the BBC. There was an extremely popular and long-standing flagship Welsh programme called Heddiw. Pretty much like the Nationwide of its day, if you want to compare. And I had a job as a researcher with Heddiw. And I was, as it turned out, I was the last researcher Heddiw had because the programme was finished in order for S4C to start in 1982. And that was a great start working with experienced broadcasters such as Betty George and Gwyn Llewellyn, which was a fantastic grounding for me.
Yes, and Betty is going strong.
Absolutely.
I see her from time to time.
Yes.
So, but after a period of time, I don't know what, 10, 15 years or whatever, you went on your own, as it were.
Well, I worked for BBC News for about 8 or 9 years, and then I wanted to work on other types of programmes and not to be stuck in news, basically. Was to present a motoring series, kind of a Top Gear kind of programme on S4C, and ended up presenting 4 of those. Which meant, amongst other things, having a car for a week at a time, different cars, to try them out and to test them. When I had some of the nicer cars, like Porsches, the number of my friends seemed to increase, strangely enough.
Ah, really? Well, so where did the writing come from then? Where did you... Was it in the blood, as it were, or in your... One of your ambitions? Or?
Since my days in primary school in Bryn Sharvel, I'd always wanted to write. I enjoyed writing essays. I won essay competitions in Llanelli Boys Grammar School. But unfortunately, the study and the television took that away, but it not completely, because it was in the back of my mind always. I want to write. And in the end, I tried to write while I was working in television. I couldn't do both. So I thought the only way to do this, even though I'd had fantastic experiences in broadcasting, met people throughout Wales, people who were well known, and did some programmes with Desmond Tutu, with Lech Wałęsa, Ian Paisley. Even though it had given me those opportunities, I still wanted to write. So
you
I had to take the step.
Fulfilled.
I had to, no, I exactly. I had to take the step. So I left broadcasting after 26 years in order to write full time.
When you started writing, what was it? Was Lolva your first protocol?
I went around to see, I didn't know the book world, I'd known the broadcasting
well, that's what
world.
I was thinking, yeah.
So I went around to visit quite a few of the Welsh publishers just to see what was what and how the market was going and what was doing well and what wasn't. And the Lolva were particularly good and supportive, and they still are. And they suggested that if I really wanted to kind of kickstart a writing career, that it would be good if I concentrated on some rugby books. Well, as somebody who was taken by my dad to see my first ever Llanelli game in September 1970, it was an absolute delight for me to be told that maybe rugby would be good to write about. I was quite happy to listen to that advice.
Well, right. Well, let's hope we can cover these 3 or 4 in the time we have. Into the Wind.
Yeah.
With Karen James.
Absolutely. That's that was, I think if I'm looking back at everything that I've done, that was something that I'm most pleased with. It's had a fairly good critical response. It's sold quite well. It's had a lot of profile. The people in Italy, where Carwin spent 2 years, have been extremely supportive as well. So that's an important book for me.
We'll take a little break there now for your second song.
Right.
And then we'll come back to that and the Scarlets and the All Blacks as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, one thing that started while I was in Boys Grammar is my love of Dylan Thomas, his works and his life as well. And I'm lucky enough for the last couple of years to do a lot of work with the house where Dylan was born in the Uplands in Swansea, number 5 Cwm Donkin Drive. And a really good friend of mine, Lorraine King, has written a song about the house where Dylan Thomas was born.
Watch as ships go sailing by, across the rooftops in the night, looking out of Swansea Bay, dreams of where he'll sail one day. Di-da-di-da-di-da-di, number 5 Cwm Donkin Drive, secret places hide and seek, Donkin Park he sneaks out to play in Warmley's gang, skipping, laughing as they ran. Here are things which make me smile, memories of days gone by, faithfully restored to be same as in 1914. Da da da. Five Cwm Donkin Drive. So the house sighs with relief, all is well now it's revealed. Through the fallen wall we see Dylan's view to the mumbling sea. Room to room I walk in trance, everywhere my eyes can dance. Back into looking out for Dylan's ghost. Di-da-di-da-di-da-di, number 5 Cwm Donkin Drive. Di-da-di-da-di-da-di, number 5 Cwm Donkin Drive.
Llanelli Talk Radio.
There we go. Lorraine King from Glyce. Number 5 Cwm Donkin Drive. Famous place.
Yep.
Singing about a famous man, of course.
Yes.
Now then, let's talk about these books now, Alan.
Right.
Right. You started with Into the Wind, but you took Into the Wind to Italy.
I did. Carwin spent 2 years coaching in Italy and took the Rovigo team to the Italian Championship. But the interest and the support in Carwin there today and broader in other regions as well, it is quite phenomenal. I was overwhelmed by the response that my book had out in Italy, I must say. I've been out there 3 or 4 times specifically to speak about Carwin James. And what the main thing that they really, really warmed to him is that he was such a cultured man, not just a man of rugby, that he would enjoy the opera, that he would go and see a ballet, that he was a regular visitor to the art gallery in Rovigo, which I've been to.
I think he could speak five or six languages.
Well, he learned Russian while he did his national service.
That's right, yeah.
He could speak Welsh, he could speak English, he learned Italian.
Yes.
So he was an extremely gifted man. And to try to get to know someone like that, I found fascinating as a writer.
And I knew him both from the chapel end, from the rugby end, and the village, and the school, and everything else.
Yeah.
Such a sad loss.
It was.
And the way it happened.
Absolutely, it was.
But there was a far happier time when we beat the All Blacks.
Yes.
In 1972.
Yes, well...
When the pubs ran dry.
Yes, well, I know that if you listen to everybody who says that I was there, it probably would have been about 28,000 people in Stradi at that time, which only held about 15. But I actually was there with the school. I was 12 at the time, and we were sat along the touchline in front of the Tanner Bank on wooden benches. And to think today, obviously, that wouldn't be entertained. But, of course, so when the players were coming the our end of the pitch, we could almost reach out and touch them.
That's right.
And once the game was over, I was one of the first onto the pitch, and I remember slapping Delmy on his back as they were lifting him. An amazing time. And again, personally, at the far end by the scoreboard, right where Roy Berger scored his try, my grandfather was sat in his disabled three-wheeler car. And to know that my grandfather was there right in front of where Berger scored the try added a little something special into it as well.
Well, like you, but much before you, obviously, I used to go there with my father and sometimes with my uncle, who was the preacher in Edgar Reddick, in the days of Lewis Jones and Ray Williams and all those people. And I too was there, by the way, 1972.
There we are.
Well, I used to be a member of Parliament in those days.
Yeah, right.
So we had a good time. It was a great day. Then you wrote the history, the official history of the Scarlets.
Yes, I did. That, again, was an absolute joy to do. It's almost a book I would have paid to do. Not quite, but nearly. Because, obviously, it's such a rich history. Going back to the 1870s, all the way through to 2014 when the book came out. Well, what a story. What a rich story. We talk about the heritage, and it's been talked about in recent days with, you know, new people taking over and the board and as a head coach, etc. at Scarlets, and they all refer to the heritage. But to actually look at it and to see, and what fascinates me as much as anything, my history of the Scarlets isn't about the statistics of the games. It isn't about score lines and facts and figures. It's about the people. The first chapter, it's quite funny, is about the history of Llanelli in the 1870s.
Really?
Because the team came from a community. There was a reason why it was formed, and I had to nail that big link right at the start. And quite a few people said, Al, what do you want to write that for? That's got nothing to do with rugby.
Ah, that's just the point, don't they?
But I say, well, the team came from somewhere.
Well, that's right. You know, I often say, if you don't know where you're coming from, you don't know where you're going to go.
Yeah, so that
was... It's an important thing, isn't
it? Yeah, and then another thing that I thought was important for that book was there's over 300 photographs in it, because I thought it was important to have a pictorial record as well as anything else, and it's you can dip in and out of it.
There are so many other books here. Derek Bevan.
Yes, that was fun.
Nigel Owens.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun. You might not think so, but it was looking at the game of rugby through two referees, the two Welshmen who have refereed a World Cup final.
That's right.
And that was the link that brought them together. For me personally, Nigel is from Mynydd Cerrig. I mentioned earlier my family from Mynydd Cerrig, my father's side. And Nigel is from that village as well. But on top of that, it was great to see the game through two refs, but one who'd retired and one who was still working as a ref.
Well, you had such experiences, my good friend. You know what I mean? It's envious listening to you talking about these people and the events. It's your third song, Alan.
Well, my third song is for the times that we're in, I think, if you want to put it that way. Through all the coronavirus and all the lockdown, etc., I think this is a song that is quite nice and quite uplifting and hopeful.
People say to me, how can you sing in times like these? Don't you realize Don't you know the score? How can you sing when so many others grieve? People say to me, what kind of fool believes that a song will make a difference in the end? By way of a reply, I say a fool such as I, who sees a song as somewhere to begin. A song is somewhere to begin. The search for something worth believing in. If changes are to come, there are things that must be done, and a song is somewhere to begin. People say to me, oh, you gotta be crazy. How can you dream in times like these? Don't you read the news? Don't you know the score? How can you dream when so many others grieve? People say to me, what kind of fool believes that a dream will make a difference in the end? By way of a reply, I say a fool such as I, who sees a dream as somewhere to begin. A dream is somewhere to begin. The search for something worth believing in. If changes are to come, there are things that must be done, and a dream is somewhere to begin. And people say to me, oh, you gotta be crazy. How can you love in times like these? Don't you read the news? Don't you know the score? How can you love when so many others grieve? People say to me, what kind of fool believes that love will make a difference in the end? By way of a reply, I say a fool such as I, who sees love as somewhere to begin. Love is somewhere to begin. The search for something worth believing in. If changes are to come, there are things that must be done. And love is somewhere, and a dream is somewhere, and a song is somewhere to begin.
This is Llanelli Talk Radio.
Well, that was Sarah Thompson, Somewhere to Begin. Good title.
Absolutely.
Because we all must begin somewhere.
Are we trying to get out of lockdown? We've got to begin right. Somewhere to move ahead.
Well, as before the song, we were on about Derek Bevan, Nigel Owens, and then I'm reminded you did Delby Thomas, George North, Foxy Jonathan Davis, David Jones. You've been with some big people.
Yes, that's the one thing that's continued throughout my broadcasting and my writing of books, really, and the stories I've done for Golwg magazine and other things. Basically, I've spent all my working life telling stories, but in different ways, either through books, radio, television. But it's telling stories and people's stories. That's what I'm interested in.
But there are other famous people. Howard Marks.
Yes, people.
How did you end up writing that one then?
No, I've written two books with him, which was quite, one in Welsh, one in English. It all started in a pub in Larne, actually, during the Larne Weekend Festival. He was there, and I was there in the Mariners the same time as him, and I ended up having a conversation, and we shared a drink together. And he started to talk about Wales and his view of Wales. And he said, as far as I'm concerned, he said, there's two Wales in my life. The one that I couldn't wait to get out of, and the one now that I want to embrace again. And I turned to him and I said, Howard, there's a book in that. And from there on, we started the discussions, and that's what happened. His attitude towards his country where he was born, basically, and how that changed over the years.
Where was he living? Was he living in Larne in those days?
No, he lived in Leeds. He had a flat in Leeds, and he had a share in a restaurant around the corner from the flat. And his contribution to the restaurant that I think it was every Thursday that he had to sit in the same seat in the restaurant so that if people wanted to go and see Howard Marks there, they knew where and when he was there. But that was, he was in Leeds then. Again, a restaurant owned by another Welshman, a guy from Portalbert.
Well, you know, there was a lot of publicity about Howard Marks, wasn't
there? Yes, he was the world's most wanted man at one time with Interpol and drug dealing. And people have questioned me often and regularly as to why on the earth I got involved with such a person. Well, we had many open and frank discussions about his life and about what he believed in. And all I would say is, without endorsing of necessity what he did, but neither would he, if he broke the law and he was punished for it in prison for years. My contribution to him, he was a lovely person. Mr. Nice is the nickname that he had, and he really was a nice guy. But on top of that, he made me challenge my preconceived ideas. He made me think why I said things.
Yeah. Well,
and he was great for that.
Yeah. Well, to another one now, but this is more sad. April Jones.
Yeah, that was one of the most...
Pink Ribbons for April.
Probably the most difficult book that I've written, based on the tragic case of a young five-year-old girl from Machynlleth being taken and mistreated and then killed. The book really is about the way that Machynlleth responded to that tragedy. As a small northwestern Wales town, I went up to Machynlleth regularly for the first year after the event, and then the book was published a year to the day that she was taken. It's looking at how the community responded and all the human different ways they dealt with what they were going through.
Did you get a feeling every time you were going there of the sadness that was in the town, or was there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I met April's parents a good few times, because I don't include them much in the book. It wasn't the time to do that. It was too soon. But I wouldn't do the book without them knowing I was doing it.
Of course.
So a meeting was fixed up, and then from then on I used to go to their home. And their sadness was the same all the way through. The community's response changed as the year went on. I won't go into detail but in effect, the big change was when some of the ribbons that they put up in the town started to get dirty and decay. There was a big discussion as to whether they should be replaced or not, or was it a time to move on? And that split the community to an extent as a way of dealing with a grief that we would never know, basically.
I have to say, you have a great knack of giving... wonderful titles to books, because it says it all, doesn't it? The Pink Ribbon, you told me you've got one.
Yes, I've still got the pink ribbon that April Jones's mother gave me. I won't get rid of that. I'll keep that as a sad memento, but as an important one of a time when I was able to gauge a community, which is a change for me, because I usually deal with people, as we've already discussed. But here I was gauging a community's response, and that ribbon will...
Right, then, Life in the Coal House.
Yeah, that was based on a BBC Wales series called Coal House, when they took three families from Wales to live in conditions as they would have been in 1927. They had three small, tiny cottages where they put these families to live in the basic 1927 conditions. And I did a book with one of the families, the Griffiths family from Cardigan, mother, father, and three children, and looking at how they went through the experience of making the TV programme and living in those 1927 conditions. So that was good fun.
Yes. Well, yeah, I watched that series as well. It was an amazing time.
Oh, absolutely.
And we hard times.
Yeah, you got to hard see times. What our ancestors went through.
That's right. Well, of course, I was born during the war, 1942. I remember certain aspects of what they had, such as the outdoor toilet without water and without electricity. Because I remember when those things came, I was 5 years of age. So there was a lot of realism in that story, wasn't
yeah.
there?
Yeah, oh, totally. It was made completely as realistic as they possibly could. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's right. Cardiff before Cardiff.
That's another departure for me, which is I'm meeting a young photographer from Cardiff, John Pountney, who had a photography studio in Cardiff. And in a drawer in that photography studio, he found a load of old photographs taken by the previous photographer who had to leave in a hurry. And they were of Cardiff in decades before that. And then, cut a long story short, John ended up meeting this photographer who took the original photographs, and they decided to come together to put the original photos together with new photographs that John would take of the present day. And then I was to write the words to go, the introductory chapter and the words that were to go with the photographs.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So that was a lovely book to do, photographs and words, which is pretty much what my life's been about, telling stories through pictures and words.
Well, to bring it up to date, we've evolved together in two or three books, but we've just finished one on Carolyn Jones, the former First Minister.
Yes, I have. If it wasn't for the virus, that would have been out by now, but it's going to be out in the autumn. That was lovely to do because Carolyn was insistent that we didn't do just politics, which is why the book's called Not Just Politics. So it's about his rounded life, and that's out before Christmas.
Well, there we go. Well, thank you, Alan Gilbert.
Thank you.
It's been a marvellous time in terms of you describing your stories, your background. You've got a wealth of experience and background. Well, Dunedin, that's it for today. The first one is over. We will meet next week, but with Wyn Thomas from Swansea Sound. Very well-known name back in the 80s and the 90s. A well-known voice as well with Swansea Sound. And he did other things as well. There we go. Trust you like the first series. We will now move forward with some plenty of other people along the road. Wyn Thomas, Dr. John Ball, and Ira Thomas, first NHS baby. The list is endless. In fact, they'll be queuing up. I tell you that they'll be queuing up. They'll want to be on Alan Evans's Llanelli Online and Wales News Online and Llanelli Talk Radio. Dabo, cheerio.